The following program will make you want to grow things and experience new and wonderful dreams about your plants, garden, and garden design. Listener participation is always strongly advised. Good evening and welcome to Down the Garden Path with your host, Joanne Shaw, right here on Reality Radio 101. To contact Joanne live this evening right now, send her an email, realityradio101@yahoo.com. And now, broadcasting live from the Beaver Valley Media Group Studio 1A, Joanne Shaw.
Thank you, Gary, and welcome everyone to joining us tonight from Down the Garden Path. I wanted to thank you for being here. And my goal and my vision every Monday
is to stay warm.
Yes, right now this weekend for sure, to stay warm. Is to continue to provide down-to-earth practical advice for gardens, plants, and all things landscaping. And since we can't do any landscaping outside, right, we need to talk plants, and specifically tonight, houseplants, and even more specifically, we're going to talk about orchids. So I'm very, very excited that I found a specialist in the field that can help us here on Down the Garden Path. And I wanted to tell you a little bit about him. His name is Bruce Rogers. He is our guest this evening, and he has been growing, hybridizing, and decorating with orchids in the San Francisco Bay Area for over 30 years. He is well known as an orchid expert and has a broad range of services, including commercial work with chains like Nordstrom's and many more. And he continues to work with private clients, building and maintaining orchid collections, creating outdoor gardens, and putting together orchid displays for parties and events. And they make great, definitely great features for that situation. So Bruce has appeared on a numerous television, cable, and radio shows and featured in many publications. He's the owner of Bruce Rogers Orchids, and he is the co-owner of an internationally prominent wholesale Sobralia Nursery. Correct me later if I pronounce that wrong, Bruce. Oz Gardens. And Sobralia Rogersiana has been named in his honor. And he's also the author of a book titled The Orchid Whisperer. Bruce shares very practical advice on buying and caring for the most popular orchids, as well as unique ideas for displaying them. Thank you very much for being here tonight, Bruce, and welcome to the show.
Well, Joanne, I'm so glad to be here, and I'm so glad I'm here in sunny California rather than that chilly, chilly area, which I think you guys are calling from.
That's right.
Very
we
cold
are.
Out there, I understand.
Yes.
No orchids in the gardens this time of year, I understand.
Well, there, I don't think there's ever any orchids in the gardens, unfortunately, here. Not outdoors, anyway. That's one of the disadvantages. We have to enjoy orchids only in our greenhouses or in our homes.
Well, you're going to be happy to know that what's great about orchids, the tropical orchids, they are, you know, I think the world's number one best-selling houseplant right now. And we have all these beautiful, beautiful flowers that we can find now. Availability is much, much wider than it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
But before we venture too much into things, I want to remind you, Joanne, that even in Ontario and British Columbia and all throughout Canada and North, you have those lovely lady slippers. And those lady slipper wildflowers are actually orchids.
That's true.
And so orchids, yes, it's true. And so you probably do have orchids growing in your gardens and if you have a little wooded area. And we're very lucky in that the orchids can grow everywhere but the Antarctic.
Ooh.
And so they grow everywhere from Canada all the way down to the southernmost tip of South America. And that's what makes, another thing that makes them so desirable and so internationally well known is almost every country around the world has orchids that they live with. And so it helps make them more popular, besides the tropical types have gotten so popular.
Right, yes. And they have gotten so, household name, even as a cut flower.
Isn't that great?
Yeah.
And we're very happy about
that. Yes.
They've gotten so popular.
I guess any grower who has his own business is very happy about that, right?
Oh, absolutely. And there's so many different kinds to grow. And so when people ask me, when you go to the big box stores and the larger stores like that, they're carrying these lovely, lovely Phalaenopsis or the moth orchids that you see. Those are probably the most common where you guys are.
Uh-huh.
And you see so many of them. And they ask, well, isn't that kind of as an orchid consultant, doesn't that kind of hurt your business that they've lowered in price? And on the contrary, it's increased appreciation for them and it's increased the client base. And out of every, 5,000 new people that buy these orchids, I'm going to get one that's really, really interested that will call me back for a job someday. So we're happy about that.
Oh, well, that's good. So that's a great place to start as well, Bruce, talking about, so for the beginner, we thought at least for the first part of the show, we're going to focus on the beginner orchid grower or someone who may not have ever tried growing an orchid. What are some of the varieties that you recommend for beginners?
Well, right off the bat, I have to recommend, of course, the Phalaenopsis or the moth orchid. And that's the type that we see most generally distributed. And right after that, there's a very popular type called the Cymbidiums, which are the larger plants with the larger skinny leaves and the big, fat, round bulbs.
Okay.
And those are pretty much the two categories that when you buy orchids, they fall into. They either have big, round bulbs and grow from bulb to bulb, much like a lily. And that's called sympodial growth, arm to arm in the Latin. And the orchids either grow that way or they grow monopodially, which is one direction, which is how the very popular moth orchid grows. And so in the marketplace today, we'll find Phalaenopsis, Cymbidiums, and then what we call Oncidiums, or the dancing doll orchids, which now come in a variety of colors, the most popular, of course, being the yellow. But nowadays, there's a lot more colors like reds and oranges involved that one could buy and purchase.
Wow, well, that's great.
Those are the three best orchids that we can find for the beginner.
Mm-hmm.
And in terms of where to buy them nowadays, not only are they available all through, the big box stores, but we're very lucky in that, as we'll talk later on in the show about what kind of orchids to buy and what orchids are best for the house. All these different kinds of orchids can also be grown and also be bought at your local orchid society.
Ah.
And all the way, I know the show's in Canada. In Canada, you guys are so beautifully botanically aware. There's actually a group called the Canadian Orchid Congress, which you can Google. And the Canadian Orchid Congress will give you a vendor list that breaks down from each province in Canada. And they'll list up all the orchids. Growers in British Columbia and Alberta, Saskatchewan, Manitoba, Ontario, and Quebec. And so you'd be surprised in these little areas, as your listeners become more involved in the orchids, you'll be surprised at how there are vendors right around the corner in some situations.
Mm-hmm.
And what's so wonderful about Canada and also America, both countries have wonderful, wonderful orchid societies and orchid clubs.
Mm-hmm.
And they exist everywhere throughout Canada, and everywhere throughout America. You just have to go to your local information or Google local orchid society, and you'll be surprised. And your little neighbor down the street, which you thought was kind of strange, might end up being one of the best premier Phalaenopsis growers in the province. So, life holds a lot of surprises in the orchid world.
That's for sure. Now, just because these plants are available at the big box stores, is that the best place for us to buy them?
Well, I cover that thoroughly in my book.
Mm-hmm.
It is like, in my opinion, the best place to buy an orchid is going to the source, going to where the person who's growing the orchids is actually selling them.
Okay.
That's kind of hard to do in some situations.
Yes.
There are not, as you'll see, there are not a lot of orchid nurseries throughout Canada, although there are some. But those, of course, would be the blessed places to go, because those people there have been growing the orchids themselves. They know everything about the orchid, and they know all of its needs and its dislikes. It is probably much better informed than the local nursery. I'm just generalizing now. Than the local nursery guy at the big box store, mm-hmm. who probably hasn't had that much experience with the Phalaenopsis, with other orchids besides Phalaenopsis. But in the same sense, sometimes, like, for example, when you go into those big box stores, you're able to buy orchids at a good price.
Mm-hmm.
And so economically, your big box store might be a good place to start off almost, in that there you're not spending the family fortune
right. Buying
your first orchid, mm-hmm. which they can get expensive, just as the big box stores hold orchids that are not expensive. There's orchids that are very, very expensive to buy all throughout Canada.
Yeah, definitely. And I think I've always felt in either the big box stores or the local garden centers is to kind of watch when the new shipments come in. So to me, with regard to any plant, right, the ones that have been kind of sitting there for, the last 8 weeks maybe aren't the best ones. But if they've just been there, right?
You are a sneaky girl after my heart. No, you are absolutely correct. If you have the delivery date of your local big box store down and you know when they're coming in,
mm-hmm.
you just lurk there until that truck pulls up, and you can be the first one to pull those plants off the truck. And there are things to look out for, mm-hmm. when you're buying these orchids.
Okay.
When you buy the orchids and you pick them up, first of all, feel free to handle them.
Okay.
You have to touch them. And if you look at them, sometimes, I don't know if you've noticed this or not, but they can be very loose in the pot. And you never, never really want to buy an orchid that's loose in its pot.
Really?
If you pick up that plant, you should be able to pick up the entire plant without it being loose and flopping around.
I do
not encourage you to buy an orchid that's not well potted.
Okay. Because usually there's a clear pot. Sorry to interrupt. There's usually like a clear pot inside another pot. When I've handled them, they usually, even in the roots in that clear pot, kind of pop out easily. So you're saying that's not a good sign.
Yeah, the better rooted they are, the better secure they are in the container, the more generally you can count on them to last a little longer, to be a little more secure, to be a little more responsive in their growth and their growth habits. One thing is, you're looking at the plant. When you look at it, you want to look at it. There's a lot of little tricks.
Okay.
That you can look at. For example, when you look at the flowering stem coming up, if you look at that stem, and there's like, how they put the little wires on to hold the stems against the little sticks,
mm-hmm.
to keep them, nice and erect. If you see more than two of those little wires, two of those little twisties holding that stem to that stick, I want you to kind of give it a second look. Because if you see three or four, what's happened is somewhere along the line, that flowering stem has gotten broken in shipping, or broken just as it's getting ready to ship.
Mm-hmm.
And rather than just cut the stem off, they go for the economic advantage of perhaps bending it back and hoping it will self-mend itself. And so they add extra twisties to keep that stem erect on the stick. But in reality, if you undo the twisties, sometimes that stem can fall over completely broken in half, which you were unable to see because of the twisties.
Right.
Yes, and there's other things to look at, too. And nowadays, up in Canada especially, it's interesting. Because as you notice nowadays, when you buy that, especially that big box type, we'll cover that first, those big box Phalaenopsis or the moth orchid types. You notice that they're in that moss, that kind of white, orangish moss now,
okay.
in the clear pots. Now, this is very interesting for your listeners right off the bat. That is called sphagnum moss.
Mm-hmm.
And sphagnum moss is primarily what's being used in the moth orchid Phalaenopsis export retail world today, because it's a good medium. It generally keeps the plant in the pot, and it's easy to keep the pot. It's much more easy to keep the plant secure in the pot than, let's say, fir bark, which is what is normally used, which is what we used to always see would be the medium-sized orchid bark.
Okay.
And this new sphagnum moss, really, you kind of stuff it in there and keep it really secure in the pot. But it's a kind of... there's a couple things that are kind of tricky about it. And one thing that I want the listeners to know is that, for example, everything else, every other kind of plant in your garden, I'm sure, all of your trees, anything that's in a pot, always dries from the top down, right? Because water is heavier and it's mm-hmm. always dry on the top of the pot. Then as you get deeper, it gets a little moisture in the bottom of the pot, which is where it's the wettest, which is generally the rule. But with the sphagnum moss, it actually dries from the bottom up.
Oh.
Due to the capillary action, it's called the capillary action
okay.
in the moss. And so it's very deceiving because you'll go in, you'll buy the orchid, you'll bring it home, and you look at the top of the pot, and the moss will be wet. But in reality, thank goodness for those clear plastic pots. If you look at the pot from the side, you'll see that only the top of the pot is still wet, and indeed all the bottom is almost bone dry.
Okay.
That's very unusual. It's one thing. It's a little something that I think all of the gardeners who are now starting to grow orchids in this moss, have to adjust to right away. And how we water the orchids that we buy from the big box stores is when you first bring them home and you're bringing them over to your faucet to water them. Once you look at it from the side and see the whole pot is completely wet, kind of judge the weight of the pot, and that's an easy way to judge how often to water, because you want that pot to weigh about that much.
Okay.
And just by if there's Joanne, as you can tell, if it's wet on the top, we'd all assume it's wet all the way through. But that's not the case with
okay.
the new moss orchid types.
Okay. So it's okay to leave them in the sphagnum moss? You just need to account
oh, yeah.
for that with the watering. It's not like something as soon as
yeah,
you get
no,
it home.
No, they grow very, very, very well in that.
Okay.
And actually, in a way, they're easier to up pot, because then the moss takes a long time to decompose. They use very good quality moss coming out of Taiwan. And it takes the moss longer to decompose. So you can just add, when it comes time to repot it, you can just add more moss around the outsides. You know, you can pop it out of the pot, add a little rim of a fresh moss around the outside, tuck the new roots in, and tuck it down into a little larger pot.
Okay.
And so in a lot of ways, it makes the maintenance a lot easier on these field mosses as well. And you don't have run into problems like we used to run out, especially up there in Canada, where you would use the fir bark, and that would stay wet. And there's a very popular mold called snow mold, S-N-O-W-M-O-L-D, which occurs when you're using that orchid bark.
Okay.
And it occurs quite often. I'm more familiar with the northwest of Canada, British Columbia, in that area. But oftentimes when I go up there and look at some cymbidium collections and problems they have in the greenhouses there, it's a snow mold is very prevalent problem. Because it does get cold up there. And even though we have artificial heat,
yeah.
that snow mold is very easy to set in.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So it's okay to stay with the sphagnum moss, but just to keep in mind about the watering. All right.
Yes.
Now, if the plant that you purchase does, or the ones that you might have at home, is in orchid bark, do you think that's fine? Or should we be transplanting them into the sphagnum?
No, I think that how I do it and how I encourage my clients to do it, if a plant has started off in sphagnum moss, like, for example, most of the phalaenopsis have, I leave it in sphagnum
okay.
moss. Now, if a plant has started off its life, obviously, in bark, and fine bark, medium bark, like much like a cymbidium or a cattleya, I leave it in that same bark. And I leave it in that same medium, just so it causes less stress and less bad situations
mm-hmm.
for the new growth. As we were talking before about growing tips, one thing I wanted to point out that it's the good news in the orchid world is for a long time when all the new orchids are bred and they're bred, you see all these new orchids. But nowadays people are starting to breed for fragrance,
wow.
and so we're starting to get fragrance back in the orchids. And people say, well, the moth orchids aren't fragrant at all, but they are. Almost all of the species, which are the original plants of the phalaenopsis of the moth orchids, are all fragrant. And last time I was down at the local flower market here in San Francisco, I was pleasantly surprised by a few of the yellow flowered ones. Now, sometimes you can find the yellow flowered phalaenopsis, the moth orchids.
Mm-hmm.
I want you, especially Joanne, next time you go in there shopping for them, I want you to go in there and give all those plants a sniff.
Okay.
Because you might be surprised. As I said, there's new varieties that are now being bred because they realize that when you have fragrance, you have the whole picture. You got
yeah.
the whole banana split.
Yeah.
You got the fragrance. You got the beauty. You got it all.
Okay.
And so I think a lot of the smarter growers are now starting to breed just for fragrance, to get fragrance back in the flower. Because the scent, the fragrance, is one of the first things to genetically fall when you're breeding plants.
Okay.
Fragrance is always the weakest genome, so that's the first thing to kind of fall off.
Yeah.
So that's kind of fun, too, to start sniffing before you buy.
Yeah, for sure. And so that people were just trying to reproduce them so quickly that like you said, the focus on the fragrance kind of dropped off?
Yeah, they got more into the color of the flowers and the how they breed, how they bloom, and when they bloom. They pay more attention to that than they did to the fragrance.
Mm.
And the fragrance, of course, as I say, it is a recessive gene, generally speaking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, orchids, there's so many orchids, you can't, every time you generalize, there's at least 10 things that are breaking your rule because there's so many orchids.
Yes.
But nowadays, especially, Joanne, let me tell you one group of orchids that is now coming to market in Canada, because you guys are bringing a lot of them in through the Florida side as well, is what we call the Miltonias or the pansy orchids.
Okay.
And those orchids look just like pansies.
Pansies.
And with those orchids, fragrance is really coming back with the war. So all the breeders figured out about 5 or 6 years ago, this is a wonderful, Miltonias are a wonderful, or now they're actually called Miltoniopsis. But the old name is Miltonias. But they're so wonderful because not only do they look like a pansy, but they can smell like a rose. So here you have a beautiful orchid that lasts for a month that looks like a pansy that smells like a rose.
Wow.
So that's very fun. Very fun. Very, very fun.
Well, I will definitely have to. I'm trying to Google it here, trying to multitask and Google a picture of it. But that is great to know. That's the thing about this industry is it's always changing, right? There's always something new.
Oh, there's always something new, and there's always someone trying to get ahead of the other guys. And,
yes.
There's people that like me that work on new kinds of orchids. And one thing that is a new movement, but there are general groups. And we just got over like a big failing office of the moth orchid boom. But what's coming up next is going to be the miniature orchid boom.
Okay.
More and more big growers are realizing that in small houses or in houses where it's hard, especially like in New York or San Francisco or Los Angeles, where things are very dense, the population is very dense, that a lot of the people are really getting interested in the miniature orchids.
Okay.
Because almost every single orchid, the Cattleyas, the Miltonias, even the moth orchids, can all be found in miniature orchids, which can be one-fifth the size as the larger orchids.
Okay.
Even miniature Cymbidiums. There's Cymbidiums that are only 6 inches tall.
Wow.
So it's really, really exciting that now there's this whole new marketplace coming up that you'll be seeing in this coming season and certainly the years ahead. You'll be noticing that a lot of orchids are getting smaller, so you can grow them. They're easier to grow on the windowsill.
Okay.
They're easier to grow, you know, all through the house because mm-hmm. it's hard when you have 15 phalaenopsis that aren't blooming, growing them, because where do you put them and
know,
et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
But if they're only in 1-inch or 2-inch pots, it's much easier to take care of them and find a place to grow them, and et cetera, et cetera.
Okay, that's a good point, when they're not blooming. That's right. So a couple more questions for you regarding purchasing. So, I mean, definitely looking for those extra clips and make sure that the stem is not broken. Sometimes the roots, I know myself, I'm always wondered about the roots are kind of sticking out of the bark, sometimes more.
Isn't that exciting? I know, it looks a little wild.
Yeah.
Looking, isn't it?
Should
you? What do you do with that? People ask me that question. What do you do with those roots that are sticking out? When you just buy them from the stores, and if you wet the moss, and if you wet the roots themselves, the roots become very pliable,
mm-hmm.
and you can actually just stick those roots back into the pot.
Okay.
You can slip that whole pot out of that little clear plastic pot that it's in, and go ahead and bring that, stick those little roots right against that moss, and just kind of squeeze it a little bit, and you can put that whole pot right back in the same the whole plant back in the same pot.
Okay.
Without even having to increase it. But if you do want to up-pot it, you can buy some more of that sphagnum moss and maybe get a pot that's maybe half an inch larger and go ahead and split it around and just slip it in like that.
Okay.
So that's good news, too.
Yeah.
You can do a lot.
All right.
Not to worry about. We don't want to cut those roots.
Okay.
Cutting those roots is very bad.
Okay.
And those roots are good to know because I know that a lot of you Canadians like to go down to the Caribbean and stuff and and go down to the sunny areas and look around.
Mm-hmm.
And all those places like Mexico, they're all full of orchids.
Mm-hmm.
And that is actually a little trick for finding an orchid on a tree, is when I'm down there looking for orchids, if you try to look for the flower in the tree or the plant, you'll never find it. But it's very easy to spot those white roots on the tree branch.
Yes.
And that is how we fall back to roots, and that's how we find the orchids.
Okay. Well, that's good to know, because I wasn't sure if there was something there, whether you should have less roots showing or not. And I did wonder about cutting them, too. So that's good. So definitely no cutting.
No cutting. No, you cannot cut those roots.
Excellent.
Absolutely not.
Okay. And usually, if you're just buying a new one, the chances of it needing to be potted up right when you purchase it is probably slim, right?
Very, very slim.
Okay.
Very, very slim. And the thing is, people say, well, when do we pot an orchid? Well, if it's bursting out of its pot, then it's time to plant it there. But the best time to do it is after the plant has bloomed.
Okay.
Because this is speaking in large, broad terms.
Right.
There's exceptions to this rule. But generally speaking, it's after the orchid blooms and the flower dies, you'll see that the orchid starts setting up new growths. And that's usually the best time to bloom.
Okay.
To repot that orchid.
Okay.
And here's another little trick for the moth kinds of orchids I'm going to share with you.
Okay.
You know when, Joanne, when they're almost done blooming, and you go into, and you're looking at those orchids, and you go into the florist, and you go into the expensive florist, and you see, oh, there's those moth orchids, but they have 2 and 3 and 4 spikes, flower spikes from the same pot.
Okay.
And there's tricks of doing that. And I'll tell you a couple of tricks right now. The best way is if you buy an orchid and it has 1 flower spike coming up or 2 flower spikes coming up, these days you can find them with 2 as easily with 1. What you do, if let's just say there's 1 flower spike coming up.
Okay.
As those flowers are opening and then dying and the flower buds open and then they die, you look at the very last flower on the stem. And when that flower, the very last flower starts to open, and before it dies, it's very important that you do it before the flower dies.
Okay.
So when the last flower on the very end of the stem is opening up, what you do is you count back 3 flowers from that last flower. And each time the flower stem touches the flower touches the stem, that where that happens, where the flower touches the flowering stem, is called the node.
Okay.
The flower node. And if you count back 3 nodes from the very end and you break it off or cut it off,
okay,
take a pair of scissors and just count back 1, 2, 3 flowers and cut that thing off so you have this long, naked stem basically, it will almost 100% of the time send out a branching flower spike from the same old stem. And that is how we get 2 and 3 and 4 and 5 flower stems on a single plant at once.
Because
if you wait till the flower is dead, you can't do it. The plant won't do it. But if you cut them before the last flower dies, it'll send out a side branch. And sometimes more than just 1 side branch. Sometimes it'll send out 2 and 3 side branches.
Wow.
And that's how we get so many flowers per the stem. And with my private clients and in the greenhouses, when we do this continually, it's not uncommon for those flowers to stay in bloom for a year, for 8 months to a year. And that's a goal to be done with, too, because you can extend the life of the flower that way very, very easily.
So the flower that was the last flower, then that means it will stay blooming longer?
Yes. When that last flower dies, you look at that flowering stem,
mm-hmm,
and you count back 3 flowers, and you cut the flowering stem, so it'll be like a tall stem, right?
Right.
And then it'll send out a branch from one of those flower nodes below where you've cut, and it'll send out 1 or 2 branching stems of new flowers.
Oh, okay.
And then in the meantime, the plant itself will send up a separate new flower spike usually.
Wow.
That encourages it to send up spikes, generally speaking. And so that's how you get 2 and 3 and 4 spikes on a plant at the same time and have them last for up to a year.
Wow.
Easily up to a year. So
wow,
that's kind of exciting to know.
That is very exciting to know that we can extend the bloom time.
Yes, and that's found in my book as well. And here's another little trick for you that's going to be fun for us, because I know it's good to it's good to have these little tricks lined up.
Yes.
So a lot of times when the flower's gone and you've cut the old stem off because you haven't heard me talk, and so you went ahead and cut the old dead flowering stem off.
Okay.
And you're just left with that plant. And it's been a year, and sometimes, oh, it's been 2 years, and it still hasn't bloomed.
Mm-hmm.
How to get it to bloom? Here's a couple of hints for that.
Okay. I hope everybody's listening and taking notes. Okay.
Well, you know, these little things do work. But here's a fun one, because a lot of times what orchids will need is they need a little dip in the temperature. Because usually if they're in your house, if they're in your living room, I bet you that living room stays between 60 and 80,
mm-hmm.
or nowadays between 55 or 60 and 70 all day long.
Right.
Or, you know, between 60 and 80 all day long. And so what's fun to do, what's done professionally with those, is we dip the temperatures of the whole plant.
Okay.
And sometimes, like, for example, I just came back to Florida where they took that little phalaenopsis, and they had one of those nice new modern refrigerators with those fruit bins in the refrigerators.
Yes.
That don't get things very cold, but just a very small, you know, she slips them in there. She slips in the refrigerator every night for a couple nights.
Okay.
And that's how she gets those little phalaenopsis orchids to bloom that way, as you cool them off.
Right.
Sometimes you can, if you leave an area where it doesn't freeze, you can leave them outside for a night or two.
Okay, or maybe in our garages here where...
Yes, or maybe in the garage. You don't want to get too cold. You don't want to go down to freezing.
Right.
But you want to bring it down to 50 degrees maybe.
Okay.
And then just for the evening, not for all day long, just for a few hours. And that low temperature will trigger that plant into sending out a new flower spike.
Really?
So that's fun to do too.
Yeah.
There's all these little sneaky tricks you can do. To get them to go ahead and go on.
Okay.
But it's so far we've covered that to get them to blooming, and then also when you're buying orchids, to start looking out for the miniature orchids.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want your viewers to forget about that Canadian Orchid Conference in Canada, which has a great list of vendors. I just Googled it myself, and I'm amazed at how many, like even in provinces like British Columbia, there's quite a few, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 different people that sell orchids. So it's easy not to get away from the general. You can get as deeply into the hobby as you want to get.
Right.
Which is wonderful in Canada and the United States.
Right.
And here's another great tip for if you're just starting into the orchid world, is every orchid society everywhere around the world will have an orchid show.
Mm-hmm.
Always, Joanne, go to the orchid show.
Yes.
And you should go, especially you should go.
Well, you want to hear something funny?
Yes.
Guess, I don't know if you found this out with Google, but the big orchid show in Toronto was this past weekend.
Did you go?
I did not go, no.
Think of what you missed.
I know. It was so on my mind, too, because of our upcoming show. But the Toronto Botanical Gardens here in Toronto had a big orchid show this past weekend. And Valentine's Day weekend, too, of all things. So
yeah, well, that's very understandable.
Yeah.
Because first of all, you have a very, very well-known orchid collection there in Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
And they have very nice cooler growing things, which is kind of unique. You have some good cooling. From what I haven't been up there personally, but from what I understand.
Yes.
Now, I'm supposed to be going up to Edmonton, I guess, in 2017. They've already booked me to go up there and give a little talk up there.
Oh, wow.
You'll be surprised. Almost every community in Canada, and certainly every large city, is going to have an orchid society.
Right.
And all of these societies are going to have orchid shows.
Mm-hmm.
And that is one of the best places to buy orchids there is.
Okay.
Other than going to the big box store, I would guess the best place to go is, like we mentioned before, going right to the grower. And then number two would be going and buying them at an orchid show.
Okay.
And orchids are so popular, they also have them at flower shows. A lot of orchid producers are now selling at flower shows that didn't before.
Okay.
But then they also have just shows that are just orchids. And those are the absolute best places to go.
Okay.
Because they have vendors that follow these shows around, and the vendors come from all over the world. And you'll see some fabulous, fun, need to grow orchids there. But Joanne, before you buy an orchid, what are we going to do again? If there's four orchids there, what's going to decide which one we're going to buy?
I don't know.
We forgot already. We're going to smell them.
Oh, smell them. The smell. So, okay.
People are so unused to being fragrant.
Okay.
It's a hard mindset to get ourselves readjusted into.
Yes.
But as I say, especially here at the Orchid Shows, that's where you can find those ones.
Okay.
They're really lovely fragrance.
Really
and the fragrances are so much fun.
Yeah.
To,
okay.
And they do so much, and they hold so many secrets. Because there's, as we say, orchids, there's so many different kinds of orchids.
Right.
And you knew that vanilla beans were an orchid, right, Joanne?
I did not know that.
Oh, that is probably one of the most famous of all the food-producing orchids. And quite a few orchids produce food.
Okay.
But certainly the most famous is the vanilla orchid.
It's a vanilla
and that orchid. Is one of the few orchids, and it grows like a vine, kind of unique in the way it grows. But that's one I want to encourage your viewers to get. I was the last time I was up in British Columbia. It was Vancouver. I was invited for dinner at this house, and going all the way around the kitchen window above the sink, just growing right onto the wood and the paint and the tile was a vanilla vine.
Wow!
And it was, and they get to be so long. It encircled this big window three times. It must have been 12 feet long if you straightened it out.
Wow!
And then all through the summertime. It opens up little teeny white flowers, and the woman takes a little toothpick, and she pollinates that little flower by hand. And that makes a seed pod. And the seed pod is the vanilla bean.
Okay.
That is what, when you're looking at a vanilla bean, you're looking at an orchid seed pod.
Wow.
It's been dried.
Well, we learned something every week here on Down the Garden Path. So thank you. That was very interesting.
Oh yes, that's one little one, Joanne. I want to put that on your list of orchids to buy since talking to Bruce.
Okay,
put that vanilla on the top of your list.
All right, I wrote it down, so I definitely will. Bruce, can we talk briefly because time is flying? Oh my goodness, there's so much information. Can you talk briefly about the conditions where we should keep our orchids in our homes? The water, the light, the soil. I guess we've already talked about soil, so maybe water and light, because that's my challenge.
Yes, yes.
I'm not sure where I can put it. So,
yeah, the best places to put the best places to grow your orchids. Now, I think overall, and myself included, the easiest places I have growing them is in the kitchen.
Okay.
Usually because of the humidity.
Mm-hmm.
The humidity is usually good. The light's good. Morning sun, where it's nice and bright. Only the Phalaenopsis orchids, the moth orchids, don't require a lot of light. They don't require any direct sun.
Okay.
But they like it to be nice and bright.
Mm.
But orchids like the Cattleya orchid or the Cymbidium orchid or the Miltonias, they like a little morning or afternoon sun. So you kind of have to figure out which room in your house has the right light to begin with.
Okay.
And which room has the best humidity. And so that's why usually the kitchens and most certainly the bathrooms. If you have a nice, morning-facing bathroom that stays pretty warm and it stays pretty humid, and if you put your little orchids in there, they'll probably get watered pretty easily because you're in there brushing your teeth every
mm-hmm.
morning. So you know you're getting there to brush your teeth and get a chance to water your orchid then. And the same goes with the kitchen. Because it's kind of easier the closer they are to watering.
Okay.
Because as you well know, if they're off in a bedroom someplace where there's no sink close by, it's a little harder to get those guys watering.
Okay.
And usually bedrooms aren't the most humid places to grow an orchid.
Right.
But there's all these little tricks. I'm sure you've seen the whole thing about the little pans with the rocks.
Mm-hmm.
Just like you do with some of your houseplants.
Yes.
You just put your saucer down there, you put rocks in there, and so you keep the immediate humidity around the plant up. And that makes a lot of sense. But as I say, if you start growing miniature orchids and they're smaller sized pots, then if you're in a kitchen or something, you can just hit them with your spray nozzle from the sink.
Okay, perfect.
And it makes it very easy to grow.
Yes. Now, Gary's wife, Elaine, has some beautiful orchids, which I saw on the table on my way down here, and she has been very successful at getting her orchids to re-bloom. And she mentioned she uses ice cubes, and once a week she puts ice cubes in her orchid. What do you think?
Well, if she's been successful with that, I don't like to argue with success
okay.
in this particular situation. But, Joanne, you know, I've gone down to the jungles a lot.
Yes.
I've been down looking for orchids in the jungles, and I've gone by myself. I have clients that where they've paid me to go down to find orchids, and I've been down. And in all the times I've been down to that jungle, not one time have I seen ice cubes in the tree branches. Because, Joanne, if there were ice cubes yeah. in the tree branches, we would be making cocktails.
That's right.
We'd have martinis in the jungle. But I just don't see that.
Yes.
And I just can't recommend that method of watering because it's, I don't want to, you know, it's Gary's wife and and it's worked for her and I'm
for
not
sure.
going to rock the boat.
Right, right.
But,
now, I don't know that it's the coldness of them. I have found that to be successful with poinsettias here as well, in the sense that it helps you prevent overwatering.
Yeah, that's what the most appealing factor is, obviously, is the slow release of the
right.
actual water. As the ice cube slowly melts, it releases it slowly. It's able to be absorbed quickly. However, I think the much better way to water your orchid plant would be to take it out of the pot. It's being put into just being, you know, as you're decorating with, usually put inside a nice container.
Right.
Take it out of the container pot. Bring it over to the sink. Water it with water that is not cold and not warm and not hot, but certainly room temperature and above.
Okay.
You want it a little bit. You don't want it cold. You want it just a little bit. Just like a falling rain would be in the jungle.
Try okay.
How, you know, that falling rain in Hawaii.
Yes.
The falling rain down in the Caribbean. That rain is never really that cold.
Yeah.
And so, and then water the plant completely thoroughly. So you get all the foliage wet. You get the medium, the bark, the sphagnum moss, whatever you're using, is completely wet. And I think that method keeps the plant better watered. If you do that, you know, if you do that maybe once a week, when you pick it up by weight, however often it needs it, I think that's a more efficient way of
okay.
overall. Would increase the health of the plant.
Okay.
And also, when you get the whole plant wet, you're also fighting things like insects.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for example, spider mites, mealybugs, because those can all be used to get washed off when you water the plant.
Oh, that's a whereas good point. With, yeah.
That's a good point. Yeah, whereas when you just use the ice cube, you're just kind of watering locally, and you're not really doing much to increase the overall humidity.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, you know, I was avoiding this term, but down here in California, we call that the lazy way.
Oh.
And Gary, apologize.
Yeah.
I don't mean to incur. I'm sure up in the Northwest, well, where ice is a way of life.
Yeah.
Well, Bruce, I just want you to.
Probably, you know, probably things that I don't even can appreciate.
Well, we want you to know that we are lazy. So that's why.
So there's nothing bad to be said about that. I encourage that lifestyle myself as much as I can.
That's
you
right.
Know?
That's right.
So at any rate, if she's having success,
yes,
that's why I don't blow against the wind.
Yes.
Because in each environment, and this is what's great about orchids. I've gone to places where someone is like Gary's wife, is completely breaking the rules,
mm-hmm.
you know, so to speak. And yet, the orchids look great and
yes.
they're blooming great.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why I'm always a little hesitant to blow, because everybody has their own little way of gardening and their own little style and their own little way they interpret what's going on. And as long as they're reaping success, they're doing it the correct
that's
way.
That's right. Oh,
and
good.
It's only in general terms that with the beginners that we try to get them going. And for goodness sakes, there's actually a whole that I think is funny, because it's ever since that's come up, it's like, oftentimes I'll be speaking and someone will bring me a martini. So they say that's the only way I like ice. but the reality is that, you know, when you get the whole plant wet,
yes.
and you really avoid things like spider mite infestations and aphids and
okay.
stuff like that. We can talk about bugs for a minute.
Sure.
I'm pretty opinionated about bugs as
okay.
well. Because I'm an old hippie from Berkeley and here in California. And one thing, I've been growing orchids for 30 years, and since I left to do commercial places, I've never sprayed
okay.
and any kind of bad herbicide or pesticide. And I really believe in that, especially in the homes where we live ourselves
yeah.
and our pets are and our children are. And, you know, I think that's a. So let me just give you a couple quick tips in my book. But one thing that I use a lot of just for aphids, for example, first of all, if you have good culture, bugs are never a problem. If you're doing a good job, and if you're good about watering and keeping mm-hmm. an eye on things, bugs never have a chance to become a problem. But if you do have problems, let's say, with mealybugs, you can take a little Joy dishwasher soap, then use the kind that doesn't have the bacteria stuff.
Okay.
You know, the kind that stops yeah. it. Use that just a regular old Joy dishwasher soap. And I use that with 70% alcohol, rubbing alcohol, the regular rubbing alcohol, not the 90% rubbing alcohol, the isotope, the 70% isotope okay. rubbing alcohol. And I pour a little bit of that, the rubbing alcohol, in a little container with a little bit of the soap, with a little warmer water. And that takes care of almost everything. And the only bug that doesn't really take care of all of the soap, they'll smother it. And the soap isn't doing really much. The soap is acting more like a spreader.
Right.
You know, you guys are all gardeners, so it's acting more like a spreader for the alcohol.
Okay.
To get into those nooks and crannies, which are kind of harder for just the regular water to get in. The
right. Now, would you use a spray bottle? So then add that to a spray bottle and
use a regular spray bottle.
Okay.
Yeah. And then what's great when you don't use any poison, you never have to worry about things too much either.
Right.
Just using a little warm soap or, at the worst, a little 70% rubbing alcohol, then it's, you don't really have to worry. Do you know what I mean? If you have a little left over, you can rub it on your legs and massage your legs and you feel better.
There's no chemicals.
Exactly. You don't have to worry about the dog drinking it and all that mess, and all those other factors. And also, what about scale?
Okay.
The scale, I know everybody hates scale.
Yes.
And here's what I found out about scale. If you're in the house and all of a sudden your orchids are getting scale, you have ants. Usually it's because of ants.
Okay.
And usually if you can get rid of the ants, if you see scale, you'll have ants. Get rid of the ants, then you start to deal with the scale that's on the plants. Mm-hmm. And that's when you have to spend a little time.
Okay.
You have to spend a little time with a little alcohol and a little Q-tip and slowly just go over that plant millimeter by millimeter and just get rid of all the scale. Because even spraying the scale with the pesticides that do spray scale, that do say they can kill scale, those are so poisonous and mm-hmm. they're so ineffective, to be honest with you, mm-hmm. just basically ineffective. Because where scale hides, you can't get the nozzle in there, so to speak, anyway.
Right.
It's usually like hiding in a sheet. So I always pull my sheets down, any dry sheath. I clean up the orchid as much as you can before you treat it with any kind of bug. And then you get more success.
Yes. So. And these are great tips because I don't know. I know it's different in the U.S., but here in Canada, they've actually banned all our systemic chemicals.
Isn't that great?
Yeah. So even for outside as
really
well as inside. Yeah.
You should be really that. I had heard that about Canada. And you should be so proud of yourself.
Oh, that's
because great. In America, we're so chemically oriented. It's mm-hmm. so sad. I live in San Francisco, and that's probably the most progressive city in the United States.
Yeah.
In terms of things like this, and for example, in our we've done the same thing. We don't use any systemics. We don't spray pesticides, herbicides, or at all in our parks, which is great.
Okay.
And it's been amazing. It's been years now, and that grass is still there.
Yeah.
Despite never having been sprayed with, and so are the weeds.
Yeah.
The weeds would have been there anyway.
Yeah, for sure.
And the truth is, I have greenhouses where they're right next to greenhouses with orchids that have been sprayed with herbicides and pesticides. And you can walk into those greenhouses at any day of the year, any time of the year. And first of all, you're always going to find a bug or two in the greenhouse because that's the nature of the beast,
mm-hmm,
right?
Yes.
Especially larger greenhouses. But you're never going to find any more or any less.
Mm-hmm.
And a greenhouse that's been sprayed, and a greenhouse that just has good culture.
Wow.
And one thing you can't do in the house, which is too bad, but you can do it to a certain extent, but is you can't use IPM, which is what I use a lot in my greenhouses, which is integrated pest management. And this, for example, one of the reasons why I don't have anything like spider mites
okay.
is because I have predator spider mites that I've bought and
right.
that have established themselves.
Okay.
That really work. Joanne, these
yeah.
things have worked. I haven't seen any mites in my greenhouses in years.
Right.
Or they can come in and you can actually squint your eyes and identify the predator spider mites and move them into the plants to have the regular spider mites. And within days, all those other mites are gone. The bad mites are gone and all the stuff are the good little mites. And they don't bother you at all. anyway.
Wow.
And things like ladybugs and lace wings, and I'm sure that you guys know all about
yes,
those.
Yes, yeah, we've done,
especially
we do have that. Nematodes
you
are,
don't want
yeah.
to spray any poisons. And,
yeah.
And what's very sad is most of the places, books you referred to, that's the first thing they advise.
Right.
I'm so proud of Canada because you guys are so upfront and so on time about that.
Yeah,
message,
yeah.
That
there was a bit of a shock because it was very publicized as far as outside. So, you know, in our homes and on our lawns, we can't do it. But nobody really, I think everybody was so focused on the outside that nobody realized that it impacted the inside, too. So then, you know, that desperate person who comes into the nursery with spider mite or, you know, scale or something all over their houseplant, and they're like, wait a minute,
sure.
No, where's that? Where's the really strong stuff? You know, and
yeah, give me that stuff that works.
Yeah, for sure. As opposed to this. You know, we tell them we try
dog,
to yeah
it
you
works.
You try to sell them the soap right the soap but really they can make their own soap so for the
yeah,
most part
there's lots of recipes that can be found
yeah.
on the internet and stuff that can be found but those systemics are right there was one systemic they used about 15 years ago I was so shocked where they would spray the plants and almost every. They got very popular, and what it is, you know, the chemical companies have to go and try to make a buck. They were trying to make a buck, and they gave out a lot of samples and stuff, so a lot of people tried this. And it was a systemic, but the plant itself ended up smelling like the systemic.
Yeah.
And it was awful, because you touched this plant, and then you touched your hand, and it was horrible.
Yeah.
And I remember that I saw that, and I said, this thing's going to be against the law in 6 months. And it actually took about 3 years, but 3 years later, that became against that particular product became against the law as well, because obviously it was doing more. You know, it wasn't tested well enough, obviously, to be effective. So it's, but as I say, it's pretty interesting what you can do. It's pretty interesting the choices available to us these days, because you can pretty much buy any kind of predatory bugs that you want to. Mm-hmm. But then a lot of people don't like ladybugs in their living room.
Yeah, well, I think we've had a hard time importing. We get them from California, apparently. And with the fires that you had last year, we had a real shortage because we had, there's a company, a local company whose name has just gone right out of my head. And she was a guest on our show, Environmental Factor. And Lorelei owns that company, and they usually import the ladybugs. And there was a real shortage.
There was a shortage. You're absolutely correct. You know, we're really lucky with we have a strong horticultural department in the state of California and in San Francisco too, because there's only a few nurseries left in San Francisco, and so we usually get everything we want in terms of that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I'd heard clients complaining because usually they had so many products that were available on the retail level. Ladybugs were so much more available, but then this year they just weren't. They just didn't have those.
Yeah.
They didn't have numbers, I guess. Those little packages, those little boxes.
Yes, for sure.
Paper boxes, and all those stands seem like they're pretty much empty this year, so it's too bad.
Well, hopefully they will regenerate.
I think so, too. And then a lot of times people are just being careful as well.
Yes.
You're trying to be a little more careful about the harvesting of the ladybugs, and more people trying to do it as a farming thing rather than taking them from the wild, because unfortunately a lot of these ladybugs can take them from the wild.
Right.
And because there's certain plants that they nest on. But then in all fairness, dill is a plant that they will be drawn to at certain times of the year.
Okay.
And you can just buy dill and plant it.
Yeah.
And next thing you know, the third time you're just covered with ladybugs, you know where they come from. So it's a good deal. Yeah, so.
Well,
hopefully those ladybugs got out of those fire zones in time.
Yes, for sure. Well, we have like whipped through this hour. I can't believe it. No commercial breaks or anything. So there was lots to talk about as far as orchids go. I did want you to have some time to promote yourself and tell us a bit about your book and where people can find it.
I'm very lucky. I have a book out, and it wasn't my idea. The moniker wasn't my idea, but Chronicle Books, which is a very well-known publishing house here in California, called me up one day and they said, well, Bruce, we want you to write us a book on orchids. And I was so excited because I'll tell you why, Joanne. I myself work on this one orchid called Sobralias.
Yes.
And it's a wonderful orchid. It grows like a bamboo. It has a flower like a cattleya. And I thought, finally, after my 20 years of working with these Sobralias, they're finally recognizing my work. And my editor laughed and said, First, that's ridiculous. Nobody knows what a Sobralia is. Nobody's going to buy a book about Sobralias because no one knows what Sobralia is. We want you to write a book called The Organ Whisperer. And I said, oh, that is so nice of you to ask me to write that book, but that is quite a moniker.
Yes.
And at which point my editor was quiet for a second, and she asked me, Bruce, have you ever Googled yourself? And I haven't. I Googled my company name.
Yes.
To see, make sure that people I paid through the website did a good job. But I never really Googled my name. So I Googled my name, and sure enough, on programs just like this over the years, because we have a very big orchid show that's coming up February 26th, 27th, and 28th in San Francisco called the Pacific Orchid Exposition. And so, Joanne, if you're looking for a quick little trip to the beautiful city of San Francisco in the next week or so, I recommend coming to the Pacific Orchid Exposition because it's really the best. It's the best orchid show in the United States.
Okay.
So, and you called it, and it's a good time to come, and it's between it's February 26th and the 28th right here in San Francisco at Fort Mason, and it's fun and it's exciting. And you can buy almost every kind of orchid you could possibly ever dream about.
Oh,
anyway,
okay.
Because of the show, I'm on TV and the radio a lot every year for the last 20 years. I'm on TV for the show. And so when I'm introduced, like tonight when I was introduced, I'm so worried about remembering, like, for example, the dates for the orchid show and your name and everything else that I always forget. I never really listen. And so sure enough, all these years, they've been calling me the Orchid Whisperer
as that
moniker came out. And I went back and looked. I was surprised myself. Like, I was on The View by the Bay and all that stuff. And sure enough, they introduced me that way. I couldn't believe it. And at that point, my wife was kicking me so hard and saying, Bruce, I don't care what they call you. Come home with the check.
That's right. That's right. Get writing that book.
that's exactly right. I said, yes, ma'am. And so I said, okay, call me whatever you want to. And I'll just start. I wrote the book. And the book has been very, very, very successful. I think it's actually, right now as we speak, it's sold out in the United States on Amazon and stuff. I just checked before we started this broadcast. I think you guys have 4, 5, or 6 copies left in Canada.
Yes.
The Orchid Whisperer. And it's also available in an ebook. But everybody likes to get the paperback version.
I know. I went and did the ebook, and I'm regretting it because it's just harder to flip back and forth, you know?
That's what people were saying.
Yeah.
So many people use it as a reference. That they didn't want to get there, and people have been bringing it into the greenhouses and stuff, and everybody, the book is very much, much more popular than the other. Well, I'm very blessed.
Oh, well, that's great.
Popular.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us, and you did agree, I hope you still do, because we talked a lot about the basics tonight, so I was hoping to have you back in a few months, and we'll talk about more of the advanced tips. How's that? And some of the advanced orchids.
And Joanne, I'll make you a date, and then in the meantime, you do something for me. You find out what kind of local orchids grow in your area.
I will.
And so when I call you up, I'll have that information.
Excellent.
I always like to know what's growing in certain areas.
Okay.
People, so.
Well,
ask the crowd what's growing outside.
Okay. I will definitely look that up.
And you have a date. I've had a lot of fun today, and thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. Thank you as well. Thank you very much, Bruce, and we'll be in touch.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now.
Well, there you have it, everyone. I hope I took feverish notes and lots of information there on all the basics on growing orchids. Right,
and don't use ice cubes.
Well, unless they've been working successfully for you, right, Delaide? So I just wanted to thank everybody for joining me down the garden path. Look forward to next week where we're going to talk all about soil. And we have a guest on. Christina Da Silva will be joining us from... she's a blogger and has her own Twitter chat on soil called Ground Chat. So I'm looking forward to next week. So thank you again for joining us down the garden path, and have a great week. Bye for now here on Reality Radio 101.
You've been listening to Down the Garden Path with your host, Joanne Shaw, right here on Reality Radio 101.